Last Wednesday marked the end of Passover, the time when Jews around the world commemorate the escape of the ancient Hebrews from captivity in Egypt. I think the story is familiar to most of us, Moses and Aaron beseeching the Pharaoh to let their people go, the plagues that God sent to move Pharaoh's hand, the angel of death taking the firstborn child of the Egyptian homes, but passing over the homes of the Jews, and the escape in the night without even time for the bread to rise. The stories retold every year during the course of the Seder, the ritual meal in which bitter herbs recall the taste of slavery, and in which matzah is broken to recall the unleavened bread of the emergency exit, and the dream of the promised land is lifted up once again. I'm not Jewish, but I have been honored to celebrate many Passover Seders over the years, usually as a guest in the homes of friends, also at interfaith community gatherings, at UU religious education events, and on one particularly memorable occasion in jail. I was being held in a converted gym on a military base with about 100 other women who had been arrested protesting nuclear weapons testing. Our group was diverse in many ways, although not all. We were disproportionately, although not exclusively, white. We were old and young, lesbian and straight, Catholic and Buddhist, UU and pagan, Jewish and Catholic. It was Passover, and the Jewish women in the group sent a message out to the chaplain of the facility asking for matzah and some creative substitutes for the other ritual foods so that they could celebrate a Seder. The matzah was provided, and we were all invited and all joined the circle. We sat cross-legged on the floor, ringing the gym. There was no Haggadah, the text that provides the script for a Seder. And so the leaders of the ritual instead spoke straight from the heart about what Passover meant to them as Jewish women, as feminists and peace activists. And then they invited us to go around the circle so that each woman could tell a story from her own heritage or tradition, a liberation story. Or maybe a liberation story that inspired her, or one from her own life. And it was amazing. We went around and women told stories of their ancestors escaping the plantation, their grandparents escaping the Nazis. Women told stories about leaving dead-end relationships and dead-end jobs, abusive marriages and fundamentalist sects. There were stories about coming out and about getting sober. Women spoke to honor the legacies of Sojourner Truth and Susan B. Anthony, their own mothers, or the teachers and coaches who had encouraged them as young girls to break out of social expectations. And each of those stories expanded our collective vision of freedom. It was the most moving Seder I've ever been part of. You know, the Passover story always resonated powerfully for me. I just love the fact that there's a religious holiday, not a patriotic national holiday, but a religious holiday about freedom from bondage. That tells us that freedom is holy. Freedom is holy, right? Freedom from oppression and violence, from hunger and poverty is a holy thing. Freedom from repression and social constraints, from expectations that don't fit and roles that don't suit us, is holy. Now, freedom is a necessary condition for the beloved community that we seek, a defining feature of the promised land of which we sing and dream. But freedom, real freedom, whether we're talking about social conditions or an individual's inner life, is more than the absence of bondage. And it's not something God reaches down and parts the Red Sea to give us. We have to make it for ourselves and for our neighbors. and no one steps directly from captivity to freedom. That's certainly true when we're talking about freedom from structural oppression. For example, the abolition of slavery in this country gave rise to systemic racist terrorism and Jim Crow laws that maintained white supremacy and prevented black people from being truly free. And it's also true on an individual level, though for very different reasons. Prison inmates who return to their communities struggle to adjust to life in the free world. After leaving a toxic marriage, even the most privileged and seemingly well-adjusted can take years to break free of the psychological tangles in which we're ensnared. And when the Hebrews left Egypt, they did not go straight to the Promised Land. No, we're told in the ancient scriptures that they spent 40 years wandering in the desert. 40 years! Now, it takes a long time to walk from Egypt to Canaan, but it doesn't take 40 years. And not only that, in those days, 40 years was literally a lifetime. That means that most of the individuals who left Egypt didn't make it to the Promised Land. If they were lucky, their children made it. So what were the Israelites doing in the desert for 40 years? And why did the God of this story think that that was necessary? Well, in the Jewish context, the answer has to do with literally becoming a people, God's chosen people. It was in the wilderness where Moses received the Ten Commandments. It was in the wilderness where the people started to doubt the leaders who had promised them freedom and then recommitted to following God's laws. In the desert wilderness, the Israelites had to depend on God utterly. And God provided for them manna from heaven. That means that it was in the wilderness that the people learned to trust. And they learned the hard way. In my experience, the hard way is the only way to ever really learn trust. So wandering in the desert, keeping the dream of the Promised Land alive, the Hebrews got to experience their interdependence with each other and with the holy in the most literal way possible. So more broadly, this metaphor of wandering in the desert resonates for anyone who's had the experience of that in-between place between leaving and arriving. And I think that's all of us. Desert times, wilderness times, are inevitable. They're inevitable for every heart and for every community. Some kinds of transitional periods might be necessary for healing or transformation, like the transitional time after a great personal loss. Other transitional periods are the products of forces beyond our control, like those following social or political upheaval. They may not be necessary or positive, but imposed on us. But even then, we can use them for our own transformational purposes. Whether your most current or most vivid desert experience is about the current state of the nation, or about a personal loss, or a transition you can't yet imagine the other side of, the ancient story of Exodus might have some wisdom to offer you. And the best way I can think to share that wisdom is to read you a poem by Alla Renée Bozarth. She's expressed it better than I ever could. It's called Passover Remembered. And this is a long poem, so I invite you to take a breath, settle into your chairs, and open your ears to really pay attention, because my message is in these lines, and you don't want to miss a single stanza. Passover Remembered by Alla Renée Bozarth. Pack nothing. Bring only your determination to serve and your willingness to be free. Don't wait for the bread to rise. Take nourishment for the journey, but eat standing. Be ready to move at a moment's notice. Do not hesitate to leave your old ways behind. Fear silence, submission. Only surrender to the need of the time, to love justice and walk humbly with your God. Do not take time to explain to the neighbors. Tell only a few trusted friends and family members. Then begin quickly, before you have time to sink back into the old slavery. Set out in the dark. I will send fire to warm and encourage you. I will be with you in the fire, and I will be with you in the cloud. You will learn to eat new food and find refuge in new places. I will give you dreams in the desert to guide you safely home to that place you have not yet seen. The stories you tell each other around your fires in the dark will make you strong and wise. Outsiders will attack you, and some who follow you, and at times you will weary and turn on each other from fear and fatigue and blind forgetfulness. You have been preparing for this for hundreds of years. I am sending you into the wilderness to make a way and to learn my ways more deeply. Those who fight you teach you. Those who fear you will strengthen you. Those who follow you may forget you. Only be faithful. That alone matters. Some of you will die in the desert, for the way is longer than anyone imagined. Some of you will give birth. Some will join other tribes along the way, and some will simply stop and create new families in a welcoming oasis. Some of you will be so changed by weathers and wanderings that even your closest friends have to learn your features as if for the first time. Some of you will not change at all. Some will be abandoned by your dearest loves and misunderstood by those who have known you since birth and feel abandoned by you. Some will find new friendships in unlikely faces and old friends as faithful and true as the pillar of God's flame. Wear protection. Your flesh will be torn as you make a path with your body through sharp tangles. Wear protection. Others who follow may deride or forget the fools who first bled where thorns once were, carrying them away in their own flesh. Such urgency as you now bear may embarrass your children, who will know little of these times. Sing songs as you go and hold close together. You may at times grow confused and lose your way. Continue to call each other by the names I've given you to help remember who you are. You will get where you are going by remembering who you are. Touch each other. And keep telling the stories of old bondage and how I delivered you. Tell your children lest they forget and fall into danger. Remind them, even they were not born in freedom, but under a bondage they no longer remember, which is still with them if unseen. Or they were born in the open desert, where no signposts are. So make maps as you go, remembering the way back from before you were born. So long ago you fell into slavery, slipped into it unawares, out of hunger and need. You left your famished country for freedom and food in a new land, but you fell unconscious and passive, and slavery overtook you as you fell asleep in the ease of your life. You no longer told stories of home to remember who you were. Do not let your children sleep through the journey's hardship. Keep them awake and walking on their own feet so that you both remain strong and on course, so that you will be only the first of many waves of deliverance on these desert seas. It is the first of many beginnings. Your Paschal tide remain true to this mystery, pass on the whole story. I spared you all by calling you forth from your chains. Do not go back now. I am with you now, and I am waiting for you. So in the poem, God warns us that the bonds we have escaped, whether literal or metaphorical, can overtake us again if we fall unconscious or passive. The God of the poem urges us to use our wandering time to tell the stories over and over of what has happened, to remember where we came from and what we dream of, and to teach our children where we came from and what we dream of, so that we don't become lulled into just wandering around in circles. I have done that, gotten myself out of a bad situation only to forget. Because really, who wants to remember pain or demoralization, failure or abuse? So I've escaped and then lost focus, only to fall back into old patterns, not even realizing that I'm going in circles, in old, rutted ways. And communities and movements can do that too. When we become overwhelmed or discouraged, sometimes those much-needed self-care breaks, of which I'm a great advocate, can morph without our noticing into an ongoing state of resignation. No one gets out of the wilderness like that, my friends. The poet says, "You will get where you are going when you remember who you are." Now, as a Unitarian Universalist, I believe that who I am as an individual is inextricable from who we are as a community. And as a community, we are inextricable from the larger human community and the community of Earth. So I say, we will get there where we are going when we remember how we're connected. The poem concludes, "I am with you now, and I am waiting for you." Now that's God talking, right? So it means the Holy is with us now in our wilderness and waiting for us over Jordan in the Promised Land. And where or what is that Promised Land of which we dream and sing? I think it's actually best described in this email I got last week. It went out to an interfaith community email list from Dr. Metwali Amer of the Salaam Islamic Center. I'm going to read it to you in full. And remember that this is the year that Easter and Passover coincided, right? It's addressed to our brothers and sisters in the Christian and Jewish faiths from your brothers and sisters in the Islamic faith. On these holy occasions of Easter and Passover, we Muslims in the greater Sacramento area wish to share with you your religious services and holidays. Being members of the same community and brothers and sisters of the bigger interfaith family, we wish to share with you the great lessons of both holy occasions. May God bless you all and accept your services and guide us to unify our efforts to live together in harmony, kindness, and love, in order to make our city a shining and caring place to live in as one peaceful and sharing family. Amen. Wow. A place where kindred of all faiths from all corners of earth live together as one peaceful and sharing family. That's the Promised Land for me. And we get there only by recreating ourselves as the people of that land. And we do that as we journey. The Reverend Virginia Safford has written, "In the springtime, we remember the Promised Land is not a destination. It's a way of going. The land beyond the Jordan, the country of freedom and dignity and laughter, you carry it inside you all the while. It's planted in your mind and heart already before you ever start out, before it even occurs to you that in order to leave that life in Egypt, the intolerable bondage of that life, what you need to do is stand up and walk forward. So here's my challenge to you, my friends and my community. Look deeply at yourself, at your own life, and see what is shackling you, what's keeping you from walking forward. Is it fear? Hopelessness? Some illusion of separateness? Break free. You can do it. There's a banner up there, the one with a red background. It shows two hands breaking the ties that bind them. Look at that image and imagine those as your hands. Imagine those shackles falling and breaking as your shackles. And then come join us in the wilderness. It might seem like a desert right now, but it is far from barren. And by journeying together, sharing our stories and songs with each other, and joining with other people we find wandering and seeking refuge, we can be the people who choose the promised land, the people who create it by living it into being together. Amen.